You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
We've been spending a lot of time talking about the NFL MVP this year. Too much time. Probably because they're big-name quarterbacks having great seasons. You can go with Seattle's Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, despite yesterday's struggles, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. You want to throw in Tom Brady, you can. But if you're looking to buck the trend, look no further than Derrick Henry. He's an old-school running back, and this has been completely different. Henry, he's leading the NFL in rushing, and the main reason why the Titans are 5-0. And yesterday, he took over the lead with Tennessee, passed Houston, gave them the game-winning score in overtime. I love Deshaun Watson's reaction when he lost the coin toss because he knew, oh, no, Derrick Henry's going to get the football. It wasn't the Titans are getting the football. Derrick Henry was getting the football. And there were a couple of times in that game where there were some defensive backs making business decisions, as we like to say. They didn't want to try to tackle Derrick Henry. And I can't blame them. And it's not even November. Wait a couple of weeks. Nobody's going to want to tackle him. Get cold weather. You imagine 240-pounder. And this guy can run. I don't know how many running backs in their career have had at least two touchdowns of 90 yards or more. Paulie brought it up earlier today before we started the show, and I said, I'm guessing Chris Johnson with Tennessee probably was the only other guy. I know Tony Dorsett had a 90-yard run, I think, against Minnesota, but I don't know too many running backs who have had – he's had two 90-yard touchdown runs in his career. Yeah, Paulie.
Yeah, Derrick Henry's really been a starter for 3 years. He's got a 99-yard run, a 94, a 75, and a 74. A lot of backs don't have anything like that.
And I think because of his size, you don't think he has speed. He has breakaway speed. Yeah, McLevin.
He is the fifth player to do that. If you guys could guess any of them besides Chris Johnson, I would be shocked.
So running backs who have had touchdowns of 90 yards or more in their career.
Actually, there's one you might get because you both love him. Everybody here loves
Walter
him.
Payton.
No, not Walter Payton. Sorry.
Sorry. Reactionary.
Yes, Todd.
Didn't Dorsett have that big Cowboy Viking Monday Night Football run for like 90 plus yards?
Is this on?
Oh, did you say Dorsett?
But I don't have Dorsett with two, though.
Okay. Didn't he lose his shoe on that run?
The Cowboys had 10 men on the field. Their fullback.
Oh, is that what it was?
Ron Springs was not in the game, so okay. They did it with 10 men.
I'm waiting for Todd to go. Didn't he lose his shoe?
But he lost his shoe. He may have lost both shoes.
Should I just give this to you guys?
No.
There's only one that you will possibly get. The other two are totally random.
Totally random 90-yard touchdown runs. Modern day? Are they old school?
Modern day, like 85-ish on.
85. Okay. Yeah, Paulie.
Fred Taylor. I had a feeling.
That's pretty good.
You're totally in the right genre.
Genre.
Ooh, I love that genre.
Sort of like a guy that you might have drafted right behind Fred Taylor in a draft at one point.
Give me a better hint.
Okay, one guy could break a bat over his knee. I'll give you that.
Oh, Vincent Edward Bo Jackson.
Yes.
Okay.
The other two are so random. One, he was a great Packers running back, but not like a Hall of Fame running back.
Amon Green.
Yes.
Oh, good.
And the other guy is absolutely random. He's been a Dolphin. He's been a Texan. Bounced around a lot.
Lamar Miller.
Yeah. Now, this is from thecomeback.com, so I'm assuming they're accurate. But it puts his fifth player in NFL history to have multiple touchdown runs of 90-plus yards. Chris Johnson, you guys got immediately, too.
When's the last time we had an MVP who was running back? Was that Adrian Peterson?
Yeah. When he hit 2000. 2012, I think.
But he came back from an injury, didn't he? And that added to the story here. You know, we waited for the Titans. If this was what they were going to be, is it sustainable? I've said the same thing about the Titans the entire time. Great regular season. It feels like they're built for the regular season. It's when they get into the postseason, and that's when you need to make a couple of plays. As great as Derrick Henry was, and even Ryan Tannehill has played well. And, that defense is sort of emblematic of who Mike Vrabel is as a person, as a coach, as a player. But, that style is that you would think that style would be that would travel because you're running the ball, playing good defense. Ryan Tannehill's third in quarterback rating right now. But this is about Derrick Henry. And even when they lined up, it was third and goal at the five. And I went, and he'd lined up in the quarterbacking position. I went, oh, I don't like this play. Because everybody knows Derrick Henry's going to get the ball. It doesn't matter. And you saw that yesterday. A little screen pass, and it felt like there were defensive backs just sort of, you know, I don't want to get too close to him because I might have to tackle him. How about I just give you the effort so when they show it on film, it looks like I was really trying. This program brought to you by the Breeders' Cup, November 6th and 7th. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action on NBC Sports. As we do every Monday, best and worst of the weekend, what you saw that you liked, you didn't like. You can dial us up, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. McLevin, what kind of poll question do you have for me?
Well, we could start with the random or the completely random. It's up to you.
Let's go random.
Okay, this is for clicks.
All right.
If you're looking at the top two QBs in each of the last five draft classes, which is most likely to produce a Hall of Famer? Joe Burrow and Tua, who looked great in two passes after you alerted us. That was a great text, by the way.
That was, I mean, nobody's watching the Jets and Dolphins to begin with, and then it's a blowout. And I stayed till the end because I thought maybe Tua gets in and just hands off. And then he got to throw a couple passes, and I was like, this is awesome. It was just great. And you know who enjoyed it the most? Ryan Fitzpatrick. His reaction on the sidelines is like, this is awesome. Yeah, Paulie.
You better get comfortable with that view in about 4 weeks.
Yeah, not the way he's playing.
No offense.
Yeah, McLovin.
Look at the rest of these classes, though, and how hard it is to produce a Hall of Famer. Kyler Murray, who's come down a little bit, and Daniel Jones. Eeks. Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. Eeks. Then Jared Goff or Carson Wentz.
So you're not taking the whole draft class.
Just the top two quarterbacks taken in every draft. And I left out 2017 because Mahomes was the second
candidate. Yeah, that's not fair.
But it's interesting to me that all these ones and twos look great to start, and then they all have big question marks now.
Yeah, it's just the position. You're going to have that where you see somebody great. We have a referendum every Monday morning or every Tuesday morning after the Monday night games. Remember last week, Packers? Aaron Rodgers playing as well as he's ever played. He bought into the system. Everything's great. You know, they're up 10-0. He's got his touchdown celebration, and then he throws the pick six, then another interception, then he misses his tight end who was wide open, and after that, he was gone. Here's Aaron Rodgers after the loss.
Well, I think that we just need to take a good look at the way that sometimes our practice habits, a lot of times, we talk about practice preparation equals game reality. That's something that Matt's talked about since the first day he got here. And I don't think our week of practice was that great. You know, offensively, I don't feel like we had a good rhythm. You know, we went outside. It was windy. It was colder. And I don't think we practiced our best this week and obviously didn't play our best tonight.
No, they didn't. They didn't play, and it felt like, you know, I give credit to Tampa's defense. That's a really good defense. And one of the big reasons why I thought no matter who the quarterback was this year, they were going to make the playoffs because of that defense. And that defense wasn't timid. They attacked, and they put Aaron Rodgers on the defensive. And then Tom Brady got a couple of big plays in there, and then it was just a snowball after that. It became an avalanche there in Tampa. But we'll check in with the Buccaneers coming up. What other poll questions do you have, McLovin? By the way, I'm looking at the worst quarterback ratings for a QB started at least five games. Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield, and Kirk D. Cousins. Whew. You paid a lot of money with Cousins. Number one overall pick in Baker. Big pick for trading up to get Carson Wentz. Giants surprised everybody taking Daniel Jones. Man, that's where you might have a little explaining to do. Somebody might have some explaining to do. Yes, McLovin.
We were wondering, NFC contender you're most unsure about, and we were trying to put together a list here. Packers, obviously, after this week. The Bucs, are we totally sold? Do you put the Rams even as a contender because they kind of got beat up last night? Are the 49ers a contender? And Paulie shot down Seton and I when we said the Chicago Bears. He said, no, nobody wants them as a contender list. So do they even make a poll of contender you're not sure about?
I think they're a playoff team. I think they got a really good front four. I think if Nick Foles doesn't make mistakes, then you kind of have your head above water and you end up with 9 wins, maybe. So I'd say, yeah. The Rams, you know what was surprising last night? The Niners shut down Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald didn't get to Jimmy Garoppolo, which I found amazing. And this is a Niner team a little banged up, but Garoppolo, no mistakes in there. Who else would I throw? Did you throw in there?
Well, what about the Bucs? Are we? Yeah. The Bucs defense looked like the steel curtain last night.
No, the Bucs are good. That's a good team. When everybody gets healthy, we want to christen, we want to anoint in September, and I always say, wait till the end of October and November. Just wait. We do this with college football. We got the Heisman figured out. The NFL, we got the MVP figured out, and we don't. I mean, there's certain givens. Russell Wilson is going to be great from start to finish. Patrick Mahomes will be great from start to finish. I'm curious about Lamar Jackson if he runs a little less during the regular season. You know, are they developing a different kind of offense there in Baltimore? Because Philadelphia, you know, came back and, you know, made it really, really interesting there at the end. The Steelers, you know, I like the Steelers. I thought this comes down to Ben Roethlisberger. If he's healthy, they're a playoff team. They're a dangerous team. That's a really good defense. No drama there. They beat up on the Cleveland Browns. Remember the Browns last week? We thought, okay, Browns, yeah. Now, I still think they're a playoff team. But I got issues with Baker Mayfield here. We'll talk about that a little bit later. What other poll questions do you have, McLovin?
Okay, in the AFC, we didn't talk about these. Contender that you're most unsure about, Bills, Steelers, Titans. You put the Colts as a contender because they're 4-2 now.
Well, they came back to beat the Bengals.
Yeah, they're, yeah.
In Indianapolis. They spotted the Bengals' 21-0 lead.
So that's like a win you're not proud of necessarily.
Yeah, like you got the win, but you're not going to be saying, yeah, how about that win? I think you go, yeah, and we beat the Bengals. And Phillip Rivers played well yesterday, but I'm not quite sure about the Colts right now. They should be a really good running team, and they've had a good defense the last year and a half, but can they, in a big moment, stop somebody, or, you know, can you depend on, rely on Phillip Rivers to lead you, you know, to a 2-minute drive to win it, you know, win a game, win a playoff game? Yeah, play.
I look at point differential a lot. The Buffalo Bills are 4-1. A lot of people like them. They've been outscored by 3 points this year on the season. The Indianapolis Colts, nobody really likes them a lot. I think nationally they're 4-2. They've outscored their opponents by 42 points on the season.
Yeah. You know, another team, I'm still not sure about the Titans, as strange as that's going to sound. You know, if you look at who they've beaten, you know, they barely beat the Vikings. They barely beat the Jags. They had the game against Houston in hand, allowed Houston to come back and go into overtime. They did beat up on Buffalo, but they got the Steelers coming up next week. Yeah, McLovin.
I mean, their whole thing with the COVID has just been so weird too, because they were out of practice forever. Then Buffalo didn't know when the game was.
Well,
a lot of this COVID related?
They eventually found out when the game. It wasn't like they go, what, we got a game? No, it's starting right now.
But they didn't even know who they were practicing for until like 2 days before the game. Do you think COVID is affecting?
Yeah, but
a lot
the
of
Titans didn't know who they were playing either.
Yeah, but it's easy. They had a bye. They got an extra bye week, which is
they couldn't go to the facility. I mean, they got a bye week, but they didn't. They couldn't practice there.
That's true. Yeah. But what do you need to practice? I could be Ryan Tannehill. Just turn around and hand it to the 250-pound guy who's going to run over everybody.
Wow.
Will you at least say COVID affected the Patriots? Give me that. That was not the real Patriots.
You played the Broncos at home. All of a sudden, we're making Drew Locke out to be, you know, John Elway. He's not even Craig Morton.
But another thing I could do, I could be a receiver for the Patriots. I could get that open.
All of a sudden, remember Cam and the Patriots? Oh, look who's having the last laugh. Belichick is. Hey, found his quarterback. It's week to week. You know, that's all it is. It's week to week. But that's what we love about it. Everybody thinks I've got it figured out. I know exactly how good or how bad. How about them Jets? That's not week to week. That's year to year. And I started to wonder about this. If I'm Jets management, I don't want to fire anybody because I want us to continue to be bad. I got a head coach and a defensive coordinator who were, you know, yelling at each other. When you have these meetings where the broadcast team comes in from CBS, and then they sit down, and then you discuss the, you know, you're discussing the head coach and the offense and the defense, and they're usually pretty bland. You just give a little information back and forth. Next thing you know, Adam Gase and Greg Williams are chirping at each other. But I would stay the course. I would just keep them in because I want that number one pick overall. Last thing I want to do is have some young guy come in there and go, come on, let's go. Let's get out there and win. Like, no, I don't want that. We've been this bad this long. Now let's have it pay off for us. Yeah, Paulie.
The Jets right now are all alone for the number one pick in the draft. And, you know, if they go with the number one pick and take Trevor Lawrence, they could still probably get a second round pick. A good second round pick for Sam Darnold. A lot of people believe in him. So the fans are going to want Trevor Lawrence. You're going to be in a must take Trevor Lawrence position. And I know you probably don't want to give up on Sam Darnold, but you'll get something for him.
Oh, if I got Trevor Lawrence, I'd give up on Sam Darnold. Plus, you know, you're going to hear it. It's already out there anyway. But, you know, Steelers would be interested in Sam Darnold. And you know, they could use their late first round pick on Sam Darnold and really have a backup or contingency plan for Ben. You know, Ben's not going to play much longer this year, next year maybe. And then you'd have an actual, you know, talent there who'd have some weapons and you'd probably see the best of Sam Darnold. Yeah, McLevin.
You know who doesn't want to see the Jets lose? The rest of the ACC, because that means Trevor Lawrence will be back at Clemson next year. Name, image, likeness goes into effect. He's not going to the Jets. I mean, look at that skill positions around.
Didn't Peyton Manning come back to Tennessee to avoid going to the Jets? Would you check that, McLovin? I thought the Jets, they had the number one pick, and Peyton decided that he was coming back to Tennessee.
I think you're right.
I don't know if it just worked out that way, but or it was... You know, something that was conscious on Peyton's part. Yeah, McLevin.
Did you guys get stuck watching a little bit of that Jets-Dolphins game? Because there was nothing
stuck.
Else. Who are those Jets skill players? There was like Bill Johnson and...
You can't say skill position players. You got to have skill to play at the skill position players. But yeah, I was watching the Jets and the Dolphins.
I was wondering, I'm not sure Joe Flacco is elite in this situation.
Yeah, Paulie.
March 5th, 1997, Peyton Manning holds a press conference on the campus in Knoxville, Tennessee to announce that he's staying for another year, and the Jets had number one pick. Everyone figured he would turn pro. The fan base was giddy.
That's when they took Keyshawn, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The Jets hired Bill Parcells in February. Manning was going to come in.
So you're saying there's a chance.
A press conference to stay. That's great. Archie was there.
I think it's a press conference to say you're not going to the Jets. It wasn't that you're staying at Tennessee as much as you're not going to the Jets.
You would have gone to grad school if they had to pick the next year.
All right, we'll take a break. Phone calls, best and worst of the weekend. We'll settle on a poll question, play of the day, stat of the day, and got the matchup that I expected, the Rays against the Dodgers. We'll look at that. And there was one play last night. Well, not last night, in this series that nobody's talking about. And I thought it was one of those plays that we would look back on and say, wow. And it wasn't Mookie Betts robbing, you know, Freddie Freeman of a home run or even the base running blunder last night. It was another play that was sort of surprising. We'll talk about that coming up. But congrats to the Dodgers, who now take on the Rays. That starts Tuesday night on Fox. Take a break here. We'll check in with the Buccaneers. How big was that win yesterday? You got the Rays in the World Series. The Lightning won the Stanley Cup. And Tampa Bay football is back. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Want to bring in Rick Stroud. He covers the Buccaneers and the NFL for the Tampa Bay Times. Man, life is good there in Tampa. You got it all, Rick. You got the Lightning, got the Rays, the Buccaneers are back. Anything, any worries here?
None. It's title town Tampa Bay, Dan. It really is. Unfortunately, it's a pandemic in that nobody can go to the games, right? I mean, they had like 15,000 at Raymond James, but nah, man, this is as good as it's ever been.
Explain that first quarter, though, when the Buccaneers are down 10-0, Rodgers doing what Rodgers does, everything's looking good, and then what happened?
And then Todd Bowles got them on the sideline and said, I know you respect Aaron Rodgers, but you guys are respecting him a little bit too much. Go out here and start making plays. And that's what Jamal Dean did. And I'm telling you, it was an avalanche after that. I mean, once he made that interception, they just fed off of it. I think after the 10-0 lead, they had like 57 total yards the rest of the game. I mean, it was incredible. And of course, you know, when you hit Aaron Rodgers or any of those older quarterbacks, they don't like that. Dan, didn't you expect to see like Jake from State Farm show up at some point, right? when things are going that bad for Aaron Rodgers?
I still, when I'm watching, I the defense should stand out more than it does because that's an elite defense. That's a top five defense. This is all about Tom Brady and he sucks up all the headlines, but that was what was interesting is I was reminded how good the Buccaneers defense can be. Why is that? That it's, are we missing it? I mean, has it been there, but we're just noticing Tom Brady good or bad?
I think it's been there since about the last half of last year. I mean, they led the NFL in turnovers, and they were one of the top defenses. Once that secondary grew up, those young guys, and Todd Bowles, we know, is one of the best, you know, defensive minds in the game. Between his disguises and his blitzes, he comes from all over. Those guys have really bought in. And, I do think that Tom Brady has sucked all the oxygen, you know, out of this franchise for a reason. I mean, he's here to try to raise the level of accountability and all that, but you know, really, is it much different? I know Tom's skill set is still better than Peyton Manning, but what did Peyton Manning do when he went to Denver, right? He was sort of a passenger on the way to with a great defense to the Super Bowl. So, you know, when you talk to Devin White and you talk to Levante David and those guys, they don't take a back seat to the offense. They know they get all the headlines and all the money and all that stuff, but they really feel like they're the engine that's going to drive this thing.
But do you think Brady would accept? Is he a game manager?
I don't know. I'm having trouble trying to read Tom because there are games like yesterday. I think he answered about four Zoom questions, and he didn't seem all that hyped up about how he played. You know, he had 160 yard passing. They didn't have a very good start to the game. He's been really good in the red zone, but they've had guys in and out of the lineup, so I don't think he's thrilled with what he's doing yet. But I know he's glad they're winning. I mean, he has said you got to find ways to win these games, and I think yesterday, I mean, they served notice. They can beat one of the top teams in the NFC, so let's see if they can keep that going.
What do you think is going to be the big hiccup with this team or the thing to keep an eye on?
I think it's just that, you know, they got to find a way to get healthy and stay there. They're not real deep. I mean, that's the thing. You know, you look at this defense and you're playing with a 33-year-old Jason Pierre-Paul. You're playing with a 31-year-old Jason Pierre-Paul, 33-year-old Ndamukong Suh. There's not much behind those guys. Obviously, the linebackers are great. The secondary is young. But it's like most teams, you don't have a lot of depth, especially these days. You can't bring players in. So they're going to have to be lucky. And I think that's probably what got them on offense in Chicago on a short week with a bunch of guys that were hurt. You can't have that. Even at receiver, they're not that deep.
But if I'm going to say, boy, the Buccaneers are a Super Bowl contender, don't I have to say that the Chicago Bears are a Super Bowl contender because they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, if you're going to do the daisy chain thing, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, I don't know that I really believe the Bucs felt like they gave that game away. Look, they had the lead with, what, under 3 minutes to go, couldn't get a first down. Then, you know, Tom somehow forgets what down it is with the four fingers. I mean, I still don't know what that's all about. So I think they look at that. You know, there's going to be games where if you're not ready to play, you have over 100 yards of penalties, you're going to lose. It doesn't matter who you're playing. And I don't know why the Bears maybe don't have the respect they probably deserve, but they really felt they gave that game away.
Have you driven by Tom's new house that he bought in Tampa?
You know, there's some controversy about that. I don't think he bought that. We called the realtor, and they go, it's not Tom Brady's house. It's not his corporation's house. It's too small, Dan. It's only 8,000 square feet. I mean, I don't – he's living in a 30,000-square-foot house right now. I think that would be downsizing for Tom Brady. I don't know that he actually bought that one.
Is Jeter kicking him out?
Yeah, he's selling it.
How much is that thing? Is that a $30 million home?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's close to $30 million, $28, $30 million. So I think the rent on that is about $250,000 or so. You can scrape that up, Dan.
Why don't we care where Gronk lives in Tampa?
I don't know. That's a great question. You know, he had a house down here and he sold it. Now he's back. His mom's just down the road. So Gronk's kind of a mama's boy that way. But
I guarantee he's got a hot tub.
Oh, yeah, probably several, don't you? Probably one inside and outside. Got to.
Good to visit with you, Rick. Good to see you smiling there.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe we can have nice things, Dad. Time to Las Vegas.
Thank you, Rick. That's Rick Stroud, covers the Buccaneers in the NFL for the Tampa Bay Times.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
John Smoltz was on the call, and he makes it look easy, folks. It's not that easy, but that's why John's one of the best in the business, the Fox analyst and Hall of Famer. You can watch John and Joe Buck. They call the World Series on Fox. That begins tomorrow night. Plus, MLB is airing live coverage before and after every game on MLB tonight. John, how you feeling today?
Well, I'm feeling good, especially, you know, I'm not going to lie, especially that there's not the West Coast to East Coast travel. That would be pretty interesting when you think about the Dodgers and Tampa Bay. So both clubs get to stay here and both clubs get to probably play their best baseball, considering there's not a lot of travel to go on.
But also how you set up your rotation and your pitching staff that you're playing just about every day. I think there's a break after game two and game five. But we've seen the depth take over that you need to have those arms because you were playing every day. How does that affect the World Series in your opinion?
Yeah. So, you know, what the Dodgers did or what they were capable of doing, you know, they might have done some things a lot of people thought were a little bit outside the box and didn't have to do. But they had so much depth that it actually won over in a seven-game series where there were no day-offs. This time, I think you'll have the flexibility to play it closer to the way that you would typically play a World Series. You won't need five starters. You may not need four. But what I was interested to see and played out the way I thought it would, when starting pitching, which in this playoffs was not a strength for a lot of clubs, the two better teams of starting pitching ended up being right where they needed to be. And I thought that the Rays, with their great bullpen, but their great starting pitching is the reason they're there. And certainly they went full bore. They went five games and seven games to get here. The Dodgers had a relatively easy route until this seven-game series, and they were pushed to the limit by the Braves in a way where I don't think anyone could have anticipated the series to go the way it did.
There's pressure on the Dodgers, but what is that like when you're expected to win?
It's real difficult because, you know, there's so much talk about history and what you haven't done, and you forget that the year you had was pretty good. And I think that, you know, having lived it through 95, getting into the 95 World Series, we had lost two previously, and, you know, people are starting to compare us to teams that, you know, whether it was the Bills, which I never understood, but that pressure on you causes you to have to think about things you never would think about. You really only want to think about competing and executing. And I think the Dodgers have handled it pretty well, knowing that they had the best team, but knowing also that all eyes are on them waiting for stories to be written about what they haven't done since 1988. And those stories are still there, but their relief is obviously greater today than it was 24 hours ago.
And it always goes back to Clayton Kershaw. He has a chance to kind of rewrite his playoff resume or the history of that. He pitched well earlier in the playoffs. Like, what is it about Clayton when he gets in these moments here? Because this is habit. It's not a coincidence anymore. What is it about these moments for him?
Well, individually, everything seems to go with that heavy weight of what the collective performances have been for him in the postseason. And what I mean by that is they're individually different and they collectively add a narrative that, you know, isn't totally fair, but you can understand. And if you're Clayton Kershaw, you want to shed some of that pounds that he's been carrying, and he doesn't have to do it anymore. He doesn't have to carry the franchise. Doesn't have to pitch on 3 days rest. Doesn't have to log 240 innings. And I think everybody rises to the occasion when they face Clayton Kershaw, and the pitching performance you could not have expected from Bryce Wilson, but he did it. He actually outpitched Clayton Kershaw, and the pressure builds the closer the game is, because I think Clayton depends on his intensity and his want to is so great that sometimes I think the want to and the desire can outrun your performance. And that is just something no one could understand, because not a lot of people are in his shoes where the world's greatest pitcher in the regular season has impossible standards to live up when it comes to the postseason. But you're right that it does fall into the execution level, and it hasn't been like it has been for the regular season.
But you find that there are certain teams, like the Houston Rockets, to me, are built for the regular season. There are teams that are built. Milwaukee Bucks were built for the regular season. When you get into that, you know, five-game, seven-game series where teams really do their research on you, their homework on you, you pitched with Glavin and Maddux. They were average in the postseason. They're Hall of Famers, 300 wins in the regular season. You, maybe not as dominating in the regular season, but we're dominating in the postseason. Like Curt Schilling. Like, they're just, there's certain pitchers where you go, you know, why and why not?
I think the biggest or the easiest answer would be as perfect as those guys were in the regular season, there's a tendency that you think you have to be even more perfect, and there's no way you can. And to be that finite, you can put so much attention on the detail and forget that you are the pitcher you are. And I used to think, you know, when you get to the postseason, the strike zone changes a little bit, the attention to detail, nobody approaches the at-bats like they would in the regular season. Look, I watched Maddux and Glavin carve people up, and rightfully so, because their ego when they got to the box was, I'm gonna take this guy deep, and they ground out. Well, in the postseason, you change. And if you don't kind of have the stuff in the zone, it definitely makes it tougher. And I think there's a combination of a lot of those things. But the other thing is, there's a lot of close games that don't go your way, and they just add to the narrative. There's been three significantly weird games that Clayton pitched and would never pitch again. Two of them against the Cardinals. I think seven runs in an inning where he had the game totally won.
Yeah.
And those things are the things that you remember. And those are probably the hardest things for Clayton to go, oh no, here we go. But I can promise you, you know, leading into the Braves game, he dominated. And no one, you know, you just think about the Braves game, but he dominated in the postseason. And he really pitched a much better than the results against the Braves.
Your thoughts on Mookie Betts as an all-around talent?
Yeah, he's always been that guy for me that if you had to pay a ticket to watch him play the game, I'm glad? I'm glad he's an outfielder. Because if he's an infielder, he'd just be another average guy in the shift. But as an outfielder, he gets to showcase his talent, his speed, his arm, you know, rob home runs, use the speed on the bases. But if he was an infielder, he would just be another guy in the shift that we would talk about the shift and not the athletic talent of the player. And I'm telling you, he would be a center fielder on most teams. He happens to play on a team where, you know, Bellinger is just as good of an outfielder. And I think the catches he made, the hardest catch was the one against Ozuna. That was an impossible catch that he made look easy. The game changers are the one you talk about. You know, he made that catch. It was difficult for Ozuna to see if he had caught it or not and got caught in between. But the game-saving catch in the game seven, you dream of those. You dream of a home run robbing catch that turns around the series, and the Dodgers did just enough to make the momentum switch in their favor.
I had not heard that before, that infielders don't get the chance to really showcase their talent because we have shifts on just about every other batter there, whereas the athleticism can be on display in the outfield because that's where most of the balls are ending up. You know, they're fly balls, home runs, those kind of things. Is that what you're saying about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you used to have a decided advantage when you think about traditional positioning. When Ozzie Smith was a shortstop for the Cardinals, they had an advantage over the rest of the shortstops. But now if Ozzie Smith was playing today, he'd be playing more second base than he would shortstop or in the hole. So it definitely takes away some of the athleticism of the showcasing of the individual. So no doubt an outfielder can shine.
Are you going to play golf today?
I am not. I'm taking today off.
Wow, John Smoltz not playing golf today. Big story here.
I'm a little gassed, and we got one day off to get ready for the Rays. It'll be a heavy work day today and tomorrow, and then you'll see some relaxation.
You got a golf course there in Texas you're going to go to?
There's a ton. There's so many good golf courses here. And you know, the beauty of being here 27 straight days is that you get a chance to visit some of those golf courses that are close. Dallas National, Trinity Forest. Yeah, there's some beautiful golf courses here.
Who do you have in the World Series?
Well, as a broadcaster, I have the Dodgers and the Rays.
Who do you think is going to win between the Dodgers?
As a broadcaster, I don't make those predictions. But I will tell you this. I will tell you, between the two teams, I still maintain I know it's well documented that the Rays hit homers and strike out a lot, maybe don't have the highest batting average, and the Dodgers are the opposite offense. I still think that when it comes down to two great teams, two best records in baseball, I think the team that puts the ball in play the most is going to win. I really do. It has been that case for the last 15 to 19 years.
Yeah.
The Rays have a chance to buck the trend. I think they're the top third. I think they're third most strikeouts in all of baseball. They have a chance to win a World Series in that category that we haven't seen in 20 years.
Now, when the shift happens and the third base line is open, and all you have to do is lay down a bunt, John.
Yeah.
Why don't guys do that?
It's not. There's no reward for them. There's not. The clubs don't want them to do it. It's not because they can't do it. It's just that there is no emphasis on that being a priority. When the game has the ball in the air for homers and strikeouts and walks, that's what you're promoting. That's what the guys are perfecting. Look, velocity is the way it is. People will say, well, it's just not that hard. I mean, it's just not that easy. Anything that you practice is easier than if you try to do it when you've never done it before. And I think that's the difference. And when you have situations, I get nervous in the booth. I'm not pitching anymore. I get nervous in the booth in the eighth or ninth inning and see that and go, I could potentially lose a game on that, a swing by accident. But when you have the numbers that show and the players just unwillingly do it, then there's no real risk in the club defending the way they're defending.
Man, it's just a different game. It's crazy.
It is. There were some situations in this series where you saw the bunt come into play more than ever. The Braves tried it a couple times. The play that the first and third with one out or less is you can't defend it. You just impossible to defend the safety bunt. You just can't defend it. And nobody really has that up their sleeve yet. Hasn't practiced that for, you know, it's like the NBA team that doesn't play defense in regular season. And you go, okay, play defense in a postseason. Well, that ain't going to happen. It's you are what you are. And you have to be able to maximize the guys in their position. The most I've ever been shocked is that runners on first and second, and most clubs are teaching the guy, get the ball off the ground. They do not hit the ball on the ground because they'd rather you strike out than hit into a double play, have two outs versus one out. So that's just the way it is, and players have learned to adjust accordingly.
Does it matter when you're throwing 96, 97, 90? Like these guys – they've seen these pitches. So it's not like, you know, when we're growing up and somebody threw gas, we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like 95 is nothing. That's like off-speed pitches to these guys. But when does speed get somebody's attention in the batter's box?
I think when you have two or three pitches you can throw for strikes. If you've got a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball, you could throw it 20 times in a row. It could be the fastest pitch in the world. They're going to hit it. If you don't locate it, they're going to hit it. If you don't do something else to show that you can throw another pitch, you're in trouble. It doesn't matter how hard you throw.
Yeah.
The thing that's amazing to me is that when you have all this velocity and all this effort, you know, you're just asking guys for short sprints, which I get, you know, at this point, I still think the Dodgers do the best job of making you really earn everything that you can. They have not – it's been amazing what they do collectively. It's not like just one or two guys. So you're going to see that same discipline on display this week. And I've never seen a collective arms the Rays have. I've never seen this many filthy arms in my life, 100 miles an hour, 99, 98, and they're coming out left and right. Matter of fact, last series they brought in two guys I hadn't even heard of. That's how many guys they've had. And so that's why the homework I have will be – but they have the ability to mix and match with velocity. But you have to have a secondary pitch.
I think you're tipping your pitches right now, John.
I might be.
I know.
I might be tipping. I got to check the video after we're done here and see.
Yeah. Who would tell you you're tipping your pitches?
Well, I wish I would have learned – someone would have told me in 2009 when I was with the Red Sox – but usually you have your collective.
Okay, we have a little bit of time. Tell that story. And I stumbled upon it. I didn't mean to bring it up, but you're on the mound pitching for the Red Sox. And
well, I'm not very good at this point, trying to come back from shoulder surgery. And then it's a relief to find out when I got to St. Louis, my first bullpen session, Chris Carpenter said, do you mind if I tell you something? I said, absolutely. He goes, I know every pitch you're throwing. I said, oh. Well, if you know every pitch I'm throwing in a bullpen, then everyone knows every pitch I've been throwing in a real game. And it was with my glove. And I changed that in the bullpen. And that very first game for the St. Louis Cardinals, I think I still hold the franchise record. I struck seven guys in a row out for the Padres. And it was such a relief because I was grinding so hard for Boston. I wanted to do so well. And it felt like, now looking back, everybody knew it was coming. They were hitting balls out of the stadium. So when you're broke down trying to perform, you're thinking, well, certainly somebody could have picked that up, but it didn't happen then. And thankfully, Chris Carpenter saw it.
Do we look at the Astros differently after this postseason?
I think you have to. I mean, no one, you know, I understand what, if I was a player, I would encourage everybody to just kind of be as quiet as you need to, let your playing do your talking. I think what they were able to do, they gained some respect. I don't think they gained a lot of respect from fans that still don't want to hear, you know, give it a year. Next year, I think everything will be back to normal. They played an incredible series. And yes, they had a lot of people hoping things didn't work out for the obvious for what they went through and what they were part of. But collectively, I think they gained a lot of respect.
Thank you, John. Great job. And we'll look forward to talking to you and listening. World Series starts Tuesday night with Joe Buck on Fox. Thank you, buddy.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
That's John Smoltz. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. The Cleveland Browns, they were trending in the right direction. Then they ran into the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had supposedly turned the corner. They had won four in a row. They had scored a total of 150 points. That's the most points they had scored in a four-game span since 1968. But yesterday, they lost by 31 to the Steelers. So they faced two good teams, and I consider the Steelers a good team. They faced the Ravens and Steelers. They lost 38-6 to Baltimore, 38-7 to Pittsburgh. So it's obviously an issue there that, you know, you're facing, these are two elite teams. These are two really good defensive teams. And before we sign off and say the Browns have figured this out, they got a lot of work to do. You know, in the previous week against the Eagles, the Steelers allowed 10 third down conversions in 14 tries. And two of those turned into touchdowns. But Cleveland was 1 of 12 on third down yesterday. 0 for 3 on fourth down. And the two interceptions of Baker Mayfield were on third down plays. Cleveland's still a work in progress. I do think they're a playoff team, but trying to figure out who they are while you're playing games is really difficult to do. When you have the offseason, when you have workouts, when everybody gets together, you got a new head coach there, and you're trying to figure out, how do I use all of these weapons here? Cleveland is going to be either really good and really bad, it feels like, the entire year. So what happened against Pittsburgh yesterday? I'm not surprised because I think Pittsburgh is better than what people think. I think people are sleeping on Pittsburgh. They have skill position. Chase Claypool looks like he's the real deal. I don't need to have Juju Smith-Schuster be the number one guy. I've got a couple of running backs there. That defense is really good, although they lost Devin Bush. It comes down to Ben Roethlisberger. Ben normally doesn't stay healthy an entire season. If he does, this is a team that could actually compete to go to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. Yeah, Paulie.
Going back to the Browns, like Baker Mayfield's stat this year, he's 60% passer, 1,000 yards in six games, 10 touchdowns and six interceptions. That's kind of below average. I mean, you know, nobody throws for 60 anymore. It's like 65 is the minimum.
But this is a guy who hasn't thrown from over 250 yards in a game this year. You know, it just feels like it's the same old Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield's 1-5 against premier teams in his division. So Baltimore and Pittsburgh. The average margin in those defeats, those five losses, is 19 points. He was getting banged up in that game. But, you know, the Browns are 4-2, and they're a wild card contender, in my opinion. But I feel like there's still a work in progress, and that starts with Baker Mayfield being a work in progress. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I saw the headline and I went back to it without reading the article after seeing the headline again, and it still hasn't sunk in. Doc Emmerich is retiring from his broadcasting career. The voice of the NHL announced that he will retire. He's 74 years of age, and I hope he's in good health. I know he's had some eyesight issues and had the opportunity to be around him quite a bit at the Olympics. And it was just fun to be around him and just listen to him. He's one of those, you know, Al Michaels. Imagine this. You go to the Olympics. I got Doc Emmerich and I got Al Michaels. And I would go to dinner with Al Michaels quite a bit. I remember having lunch with Doc Emmerich one day. And you just sit there and listen. Like, if you're smart, you don't say anything. And the same with Al Michaels. Like, these are... I've been so fortunate to be around these voices, but to grow up with these voices. When you think, like, some of the landmark voices in sports, and I know we get into who's the best play-by-play voice. Al Michaels will tell you that Doc Emmerich is. Hockey is so difficult. It's complex. There's so many names, and to, you know, to be able to see this, and Doc having some eyesight issues. I know that when we were in the Olympics and he was doing water polo and he had a hard time differentiating the number 3 and number 8 when somebody would have the number on their cap in water polo. But he made a game better, no matter what the game was. Because a lot of times, you know, when you're tuning in, you're going to have your best people do the best games. It's when the game is not a great game, but that voice is still there to accompany you. And that's something that he did. And he made non-hockey fans feel welcome when they listen to him. Like, the greatest compliment I can probably give him is he didn't talk down to you. He wanted to talk with you. And he wanted to let you know what was going on. And his vocabulary is second to none when it came to play-by-play. But, you know, we'll reach out to him and, you know, love to have him on. But, you know, earned his PhD and that nickname in broadcasting while at Bowling Green. You know, Doc Emmerich. Yeah, Paul.
A few years ago during the Olympics, someone on the Twitter was watching USA versus Canada, and they wrote down every word that Doc Emmerich used for pass, like lays the pass down, lays the puck down, flew, cleared, chopped. He used 70 different words in lieu of just pass because there's so many passes during a game. And it's fascinating because he does them spotlessly, and I think that's what's fascinating for a casual hockey fan is to hear Doc Emmerich do the sport so clean and almost never have a flub because it goes so fast.
And he's such a gentle man when you're around him. Like, he always looks for the good in his sport. And, you know, he's a deacon in the church, but he is a national treasure. Yes, he.
He once said, speaking of his vocabulary, he said something like, once I was watching a game and he's like, so-and-so shuttles the ball up to this guy who jimmies it over to the side. You're like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
And he did baseball. You know, he loved the Pirates. He got to do that. But it was always a treat to listen to him. But to be around him and call him a friend, far more rewarding. You know, it really was. But announcing that he's going to step down, and that's a big loss for the NHL and also NBC.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.